the Worthwhile Podcast, a Christ-centered podcast to provide encouragement, practical guidance, and spiritual perspective to your ministry, leadership, and life. Each week, we will talk about important applications for personal development, healthy relationships, entrepreneurship, ministry tools, and ultimately, leading a worthwhile life. Because nothing worthwhile is ever easy, but finding a great podcast about it should be.
Hi, I'm Pastor John. Thank you for tuning in to the Worthwhile Podcast. We believe that you are worthwhile and that your life matters. And that's what this podcast is all about. We promise to keep this podcast commercial-free and 100% listener-supported. So if you'd like to join our partners, please visit patreon.com/theworthwhilepodcast and join us at any level that feels right to you. You'll get a personal thank you from me, Pastor John, and you'll win some nice gifts and cool swag along the way. Again, visit patreon.com/theworthwhilepodcast. And thanks in advance. Hello, everybody. I am so excited because today I have my favorite human being in the whole world joining me for episode number 4, which we're going to call The Worthwhile Marriage. That's right. I've got my wife, Tiffany Markham. Tiffany is one of the strongest, most humble people that I know. She is slow to brag. She's quick to give credit to others. And yet she's easily one of the most influential people in any room that she walks into. Her and I have been married for 16 years this month. We have 4 crazy, full of life, spunky kids, and we've tackled the ups and downs of ministry, leadership, and life together every step of the journey. She makes me a better man, a better pastor, a better father, and overall just a better human being. And I wish every marriage could have the kind of joy and confidence that we get to share with one another. And that's what this episode today is all about. Her and I have had the privilege to co-counsel dozens of couples who are either preparing to get married or were trying to improve, fix, work on something in their marriage. And today we want to give you a little bit of a sneak peek into what we would consider some keys to having a worthwhile marriage. So welcome, Tiffany. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I had to talk her into this. I had to bribe her with barbecue, and that's why she's here today. So I'm really grateful that you chose to join me for this. So what has been your favorite part of being married to me in 16 years?
It has been an adventure.
That was a nice way of putting it. You care to elaborate or anything?
It's like going to a theme park and getting on different roller coasters. You mm-hmm. don't know what turn is coming next, mm-hmm. but you're safe and secure in the seat and you're buckled in, and there may be some screaming and occasional vomiting.
But that is awesome. That may be the best description for marriage I've ever heard.
It's been a great ride. So
Yes, it has. What's been you? I'm not going to ask what your least favorite part of this journey has been. After
the vomiting. The vomiting.
Oh, man. Sincerely, I love you, and I don't just say it because I'm your husband and I have to. I really do love you. You're my best friend. And you have been for well over 16 years now, and it's a joy to get to do life with you, and including this podcast today. Obviously, this is the Worthwhile Podcast. We're calling this episode The Worthwhile Marriage. And just to jump into the conversation for the stuff that we had to talk about today, what would you call a worthwhile marriage? Like, how would you define that for our folks who are listening to this?
For me, a sign of a worthwhile marriage is that I can lay my head down at night and have peace and comfort and security, and just I can go to sleep without batting an eye, and knowing that just says so much more about the marriage and the security that I have in it. And that there's just this level of peace and confidence that is a launching board for everything else that we do.
That's really good. And obviously in the course of this podcast today, or talk about some of the reasons for that confidence and what makes that. When we were preparing for this and talking about it, something I kind of thought of as I was thinking about our kids, of course, but also you've got a much older brother, but for anybody else who might be listening, when I think of a worthwhile marriage, I'm thinking of if my kids or my siblings or somebody younger than me that I cared about, if somebody else had the same kind of marriage that I had, that I'd be very happy and hopeful for their future. That's what I think. Something that if somebody else had the same marriage, we'd be very confident and happy for what they have ahead of them. And that's what I want for everybody listening here, whether you're married now or hoping or planning to be married one day. We want you to have that kind of peace at night, that comfort that comes when you lay your head down and know that things are well in your world and in your marriage, the kind of marriage that you would hand down to somebody else and be proud for their future. One of the things that you and I also kind of talked a little bit about in preparation for this podcast today was, is marriage dead? It sounds like a lot less people get married. There's often a lot of statistics to get thrown around about divorce rates and stuff like that. What's just your thought on the well-being or not well-being of marriage, for that matter?
I don't think marriage is dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's been made into something that is slightly less precious.
And that's a good point.
It's been looked at as something that you can just do and then get out of if it's not working out for you.
Right.
So there are more divorces. There are more couples just deciding not to get married.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that marriage is dead.
Right. A lot of times, I mean, I've done a little bit of research into this for our episode today, and the statistic that always gets thrown around is half of all marriages end in divorce. And kind of find out that's not true. At least it's not true anymore. It was true at one point in time, particularly in the 80s, but the rate of divorce has gone down significantly over time. I don't know the exact current stats, but I know that it's dropped 10-12%, something like that, over the last 20 years or so. And a part of that is that, of course, a lot of people may be thinking this or have even said this, well, it's because a lot fewer people are getting married these days, and that is also true. However, the people who are getting married are tending to stay together longer. I do want to share just a few quick statistics with our listeners who may be wondering about some of this in regard to is marriage dead. First of all, you know, there's a lot of thought that, well, forget marriage, it's too complicated and it's too there's too many pressures, we'll just live together. Well, here's just some statistics on that. First of all, if you're just a couple living together and you decide to have a family and you're not actually married, statistically speaking, that couple in that situation is 2/3 likely to split up before that child reaches 12 years old. With couples who stay married, statistically speaking, 25% split before the child reaches 12 years old. In addition to that, you know, sexually speaking, couples who are living together but not married tend to, statistically speaking, be much more promiscuous. They find other sexual partners outside of the relationship, and yet they would also say that they are generally far less satisfied sexually as well. Those couples in those situations tend to have less plans for a long-term future, not just together, but just in general, which is a little bit ironic because as my wife and I were looking up some of this data, we found out that, statistically speaking, those kinds of couples who live together and are not married generally have a higher education. Those types of homes tend to have higher rates of abuse, have less economic resources, and less extended family support. Now, I'm not saying that's you if you're in that situation, but these are some things that tend to be true of these homes. And that's just for the couple. When you have a child in that kind of a home, there's a lot of other factors that come into play. A child in a home where a couple is living together but not married, that child is less likely to graduate, more likely to end up abusing drug and alcohol, more likely to have emotional and social health problems, and less likely to have a father in their life. And I'll save this for another episode, but there is tons of research, not just Christian research, but tons of secular research, secular data, census data, on the characteristics of children who grew up in a life without a father. And again, we'll save that for another day, but the point is that is generally not healthy for a child to not have a father figure. So with all that said, we would be strongly on the side of pro-marriage. And let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let's fix the problem. Let's have better marriages, because better marriages make better families, make better worlds. So most people who want to get married anyway say that they love the other person when they get married, but then things seem to change. So Tiffany, why is marriage so hard? I mean, the roller coasters you talked about, why are there these dizzying, vomity moments in marriage?
I think it's hard because, one, you're dealing with people, and people are hard.
Right.
You're hard, your spouse is hard, your kids are hard, everybody's hard at some point or another. And it makes it difficult to sometimes talk to those people,
mm-hmm.
or communicate that different things that need to be communicated,
right,
in a way that the other person can understand, or that it's being communicated to you in a way that you can understand. And there's just these things that if you don't talk about them and if you don't try to fix those problems, then that's the stuff you're going to talk about.
So. Right. They don't get better if you don't deal with them, right? Well, other people have pointed this out, and this may just be conjecture, but something I've heard somewhere in a few places that your spouse, that under the best circumstances, your spouse is only ever going to be able to meet like 80% of your expectations. And a lot of times we tend to focus on the 20% of the expectations that aren't being met, mm-hmm. and instead of the 80% that are. And nobody's going to fulfill us in that way. And quite frankly, the opposite's true the other way around either. We're not going to meet more than maybe 80% of the other person's expectations either.
Sometimes the expectations that are met,
yep.
are different based on the time of year or the place in your marriage that you're at. You may not be able to meet that expectation early on in your marriage, but you may grow to meet that expectation in a few years.
That's
and,
really good.
Or you may drop another expectation that was, or you may... There's just this adjustment.
There's some fluidity to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah,
So we're summarizing these up in kind of three ways and kind of putting a kind of a general summary of all of them. But in general, the way we tend to look at these conflicts in marriage are unmet expectations, unexpressed expectations, and unrealistic expectations. Unmet expectations, as we kind of talked about, are, you know, I expect you to do this, or you said you do this, or these are just some basic expectations of, you know, being married, you know, like you're going to be faithful, you're going to come home at some point, etc., and you didn't, or you weren't faithful, or whatever. Unexpressed expectations are generally more specific. There's an area of your life where you want them to do something, but they didn't know, and you didn't say it, and so this is a communication component. And then unrealistic expectations. There's some things that your spouse just isn't capable of doing. It may be important to you, and you've got to decide that you're going to let it go, that you're going to help fill that gap yourself, or that you're going to release them from responsibility from that, or that you're going to, that it's not an expectation that you're willing to stay in, and that leads us back to divorce statistics. But in general, and this is going to sound like I'm putting blame on somebody, and I am, because there's two of you involved in marriage, and it's likely some shared responsibility between the two of you. But in short, selfishness, putting yourself and your wants and your needs above your spouse. When one or both people in the marriage are doing that, you're leading yourself straight into an unhealthy marriage, a non-worthwhile marriage, a marriage that is going to be more taxing than it is rewarding. To springboard from the scriptures where a lot of this is going to be based off of for our conversation today, in Ephesians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul writes and gives us some really basic foundational keys to a worthwhile marriage. And specifically verse 22 and verse 25, I could preach that whole chapter, but this isn't a sermon podcast, it's a worthwhile podcast. And in Ephesians 5, 22 and 25, the Apostle Paul writes, "Wives, be subject to your own husbands, as to the Lord. And husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her." And I share that little passage of scripture with you for two thoughts. That a healthy marriage consists of two people who are mutually humbling themselves for the betterment of the other person. It is wives following the leadership of their husband as if God himself, and husbands sacrificing who they are to their wife unconditionally and self-sacrificially. And individually, those two things sound daunting and terrifying and not like something that we want, and certainly kind of sexist in our culture today. But when done properly together, they're to the betterment of both people, the marriage altogether, and the family that is surrounding that marriage. Would you agree with that? Anything you'd add to that?
Absolutely. And I know that as women, we get hung up on that word subject or submissive or whatever your version of that verse says. And it is. It's a choice. Mm. And it's to be honoring and to be a helpmate. But also, it says more about you as a wife than it even does about your husband. It says, like, that you're committed to this, and you're committed to his happiness, just like he's supposed to be committed to your happiness.
Right.
And so, it's hard to get over that word, but if you can get over that word and see the true meaning behind that verse, it really can open your eyes and really can make it a lot easier to want to do that.
That's good. The word, just to deal with the wife side of this for a minute, the word often associated with this too is the word honor. And we've talked a lot about honor in the past, but honor, as I just thought about this with what you were saying, honor says more about the person who gives it than it does the person who receives it. And being an honorable person doesn't mean you have a lot of people honoring you. Being an honorable person means that you know how to give honor to where honor is due. So good stuff there. Good. So how do you have a worthwhile marriage? What are some of the things that create a worthwhile marriage? What are some things that are true about a worthwhile marriage where a couple has the kind of happiness, the kind of contentment, the kind of confidence that you talked about? What are just some of those things that you would say make that marriage possible, Tiffany?
So we always joke, and when I guess we're not really joking, but we always kind of compete on who thinks that they were lucky enough to marry the other person. And while my husband is incorrect in his statement, I believe that you get two people who are truly convinced that they were the lucky one to get to marry that other person. Yeah. And not in the sense that they weren't worthy of marriage or they weren't worthy of that person's love, but it's the luck. And that just kind of adds a little bit of excitement. Everybody likes to be lucky.
Yes.
And so it adds a little level to it that I feel lucky to have married my husband, for him to have chosen me to marry. Right. So
it's the one fight we haven't resolved yet, and it's probably the only argument that I'm right on. And I'm just going to leave that there. It's funny, and this actually happened, and I don't think the person that is involved would mind me telling the story. I'm not going to name them, but there's a couple that was dating that the girl really thought that, I'm going to marry him one day, and you kind of shared that kind of a thought about, I don't know if she asked or if it came up in conversation, but he happened to be there when she asked this, or when this came up, and you said, what makes our marriage happy is that we both really, really believe that we're the one that got lucky in the marriage. And she was like, oh, that's so sweet. And she looks at her then boyfriend and says, do you feel lucky that you married me, or that we're dating rather? And he stopped and thought about it for a minute, which I immediately thought of, like, Olaf, like, you hesitated. But he didn't just hesitate. He doubled down. He goes, nah, I'm pretty sure you're the lucky one. And she just goes, oh, snap. Well, short story long, they're not together anymore. And it, he was right about one thing. It became a self-fulfilling prophecy you're not going to work out, because two people who are really convinced that the other person, that they're lucky to be with the other person. A second thing just to add to that is a commitment that we're going to resolve our problems. And, 16 years of marriage together, we've had plenty of problems. We've had plenty of arguments. Stop that. And, some of our arguments have lasted half the night, and it sucks, and it's not fun, and there's lots of tears, and but what we find through that is that we're committed to making us right. We're committed to fixing the problem, even if it means coming to the conclusion, I was wrong all along, and I owe you an apology, and I didn't see something your way, and I could have been more thoughtful or considerate or sensitive or whatever the case was about what you needed from me at that time. But we're really committed that we're going to resolve our problems. And along those lines, kind of a secondary component to that is that when there is a problem, that you're safe to bring it up, that I can say, hey, I need to talk about something, and know that I'm not going to get punished because I've got a concern. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I would also add that just because you've dealt with a problem once does not mean that you will not have to deal with it again.
Ouch.
And
yeah,
we're people, and sometimes things don't get resolved the first time around, and it'll come back up, or it's not done in one day, and you pass out and you wake up the next day and there's still that problem lingering, or the dishes still aren't done, or whatever the problem happens to be, and you're gonna have to revisit it, and you're gonna have to be humble and understand and give grace to both parties involved, and just understanding that you're gonna have to readdress some things, and definitely the being safe to bring something up. You don't want to have to feel like you're walking on eggshells. That's not
right.
That's not love. That's not
that's good.
Caring and putting the other person's needs first.
Right.
You should be able to. Your partner is not always going to know. He's not a mind reader. I wish they were. Man, do I wish they were. I feel like women are.
Every
sometimes.
Woman wishes that. And every woman thinks that they're one.
I feel like women are. It's just our, sixth, seventh, eighth sense that we've developed.
Whatever it's up to. Yeah, sure.
But they're not mind readers. And so you're going to have to be able to bring things up and say, hey, this is a problem.
Yeah.
And so for the husband or the wife, depending on whose problem is being brought to,
mm-hmm.
just understanding that they're not doing this to punish you. They're doing this to say, this is bothering me. And
right.
this is not showing me love at this point. Like,
mm-hmm.
we need to resolve this.
One thing that I feel like I have to consistently put effort into working on when it comes to this is not when I have a problem that I want to bring up to you, but when I feel like how I respond to you when you're bringing a problem to me. I think that it's really easy. I think it's easier to get yourself in the right headspace and decide I'm going to bring this up as lovingly as possible, but then it's very difficult to respond to that when you're the one receiving
right.
that.
Well, that's the offense and defense
right.
of being on the field. Like, you're in a game, and if you're on the offense, you're in charge, you're in control, you're running it. If you're on defense, then you don't know what's coming at you,
mm-hmm.
and so you've got your guard up, and it's hard to put your guard down.
That's good.
In your marriage.
That's really good. That's a very valuable perspective. One of the next things that we talk about as being a core value, a core thing in a worthwhile marriage, is having a common purpose, or common purposes, depending on your context. And by that, for us, that means a few things specifically. We are a ministry family. We have a church. I'm a pastor. Tiffany has a ministry within that as well. And in addition to that, we have a family. You know, we have a family that we put a lot of effort and energy into. We have a vision, a desire for our family and our kids growing up. We picture a day where our kids are grown and, you know, very much out of the house, you know, but they have families of their own and careers of their own and making good choices and doing good things and doing their part to make the world a better place in their lifetime. And so every day that we're doing marriage together, it's not just going to work, coming home, eating food, taking a shower, going to bed, paying bills, and repeating the same thing the next day. There's a place we're trying to go together. There's a thing we're trying to accomplish together. We see ourselves and our marriage as a piece and a bigger thing that we belong to. And I think that marriages that don't have a common purpose or don't have common purposes, and there can be more than one, I think they tend to struggle, and it tends to feel like a dead-end kind of a marriage. What do you think about that?
I agree. I think that our desire and our purposes are what drive us.
Mm.
And as long as we're moving forward towards our purposes and towards our goals, it's not a dead end. Like,
right.
there's something that purpose and that goal is at the end of that. And that if you don't have that, I feel like you're just spinning your wheels.
Yes.
And
I think a lot of people
you're stuck in the mud type mentality, and you just and that does feel like a dead end.
Yes.
You're not going anywhere. But if you have something to aim for and to move towards,
right.
and you're making steps to do that as a couple and as a family, then you're moving.
Right. I think that a lot of couples, when they got married, that was the whole purpose of the dating, you know, courting, if you will, that you know, marriage was the common purpose. We're going to get married. We're going to have a family. We're going to go on a honeymoon. We're going to have this great time. And then you got through all of that, and you know, and then it's like, okay, well, we're going to have a kid, and that became the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to buy a house. And then you have all of that, and then there's kind of a, well, now what? kind of a thing. And the thing I love about our marriage, and that I love about the marriages around us that are certainly intentional and worthwhile in their purpose, is that they have a thing that they do together. There's a purpose for their marriage, there's a purpose for their family, and they're working towards that together. It's not just an individual thing, it's a thing that they are very much mutually committed to together. Another thing is, and this is kind of a big one, intentional focus on our marriage. And this is a good, you know, next to last one that we're kind of sharing here, because nothing's left to chance. Nothing left to chance works out very well. There was a story of a farmer who, this is like one of these old preacher illustrations, but I feel like this is a good place to use it. There's a story of a farmer that had a nice farm, and you know, he attended the local church or whatever, and the pastor came to visit him one day and looked at his farm, and you know, acre after acre of beautiful field with rows of whatever crops, well organized, well laid out, well irrigated. And pastor looks at the farmer and says, "Wow, what a beautiful farm you got here. God sure did give you a beautiful farm." And the farmer very humbly kind of nodded along and said, "Yep, yes he did." Kind of looked over his farm, looked over all of his acres of well manicured, very intentional effort in making it look the way it did. And he goes, "Yep, God did give me a beautiful farm." And he looked back at the pastor and he said, "But you should have seen when he had it all to himself." And that's kind of the thing about marriage, is that God has given us this gift, but like everything else, God didn't give us boats, but he gave us trees. He didn't give us buildings, but he gave us ironwork, and he gave us the ability to create beautiful things out of the resources that he gave us, and marriage is no different. God's given us this beautiful gift of marriage, but something that we have to work on to improve and to grow, and I believe that's very much a part of how God designed and intended marriage to be. So with that in mind, Timmy, what are just some ways that we work on our marriage? Like, what are some ways we put intentional effort into making our marriages better? What are the things that we have to work on?
We date. We date a lot. No, not a lot, but we do date, and we make it an intentional thing to get some time alone together. And like John said, we have four kids. It's kind of hard to get some time alone.
Mm-hmm.
But when you make it a priority to set some time aside, then you get to have conversations and you get to see how the other person's doing, and you
yes.
get to dream together mm. and see what your next goal is and what you are doing, and really do a pulse check on how everybody's doing. And
it's good.
And you just kind of, just like when you're dating before you're married, you just kind of get that, like,
mm-hmm.
just that one-on-one time together, and that you feel special.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and one of the things that we've tried to do in our dating is I try to interview her. I try to ask her questions on our dates, whether it's just in a car ride on our way to a restaurant somewhere or over dinner or whatever. I like talking to her. I like her to feel like I'm still pursuing her, like I'm still trying to discover and learn things about you, because I care about you. And even though I've been married to you for 16 years, you're not the same person now that you were when we first got married.
This,
I mean, how could you be? You've been stuck with me for 16 years. Like, something had to have evolved or devolved, as the case may be.
It's all part of the roller coaster.
All part of the roller coaster. But I love discovering those things about you, and some of the, like, well, what could you possibly ask her after 16 years? I've asked you a lot of the same questions that I may have asked you years ago, and in some of those cases, the answers have changed.
Mm-hmm.
In one part, we have kids who are growing, and so there's constantly new material to discuss just with that. We've got two teenagers now, or about to be at two teenagers, and there's just a lot that I get to learn, and I love learning your perspective. I love getting the opportunity to see things through your eyes and see the world and me and our family. And even yourself through your eyes. It helps me value you and appreciate you, and I feel closer to you because of that. But yeah, you've got to work on it, because nothing worthwhile is ever easy, and that certainly includes your marriage. So you got to put intentional focus and effort and energy into your marriage. We always, with all the couples we do pre-marriage counseling with, we always have four key areas that we focus on, and we'll be brief on this part. We're already right around the 30-minute mark with this podcast, but we want to kind of briefly talk about the four key areas, and just to kind of give a little tiny bit of context first, these are the areas that are consistently numbered off as the reasons why couples divorce. From lack of compatibility, quote-unquote, I'm just giving the reasons that are given in the statistics, from there. So, Tiffany, why don't you walk us through the four key areas of working on your marriage? If you think there's just specific areas we need to work on, why don't you just kind of walk us through what those four areas are?
So the first area is your communication or your conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to fight. So
right.
Just embrace it and learn how to talk to the other person.
Yes.
And even when you're not fighting, you still need to be able to learn how to communicate things to your partner.
Right.
You need to be able to know how and when should I tell them that I need this, and this done. Do I do that when they're in the middle of a meeting and I'm texting them a list of things? Or do I need to have a face-to-face conversation so that they can see
my body language
and all of that? Do I need to write it down for them? Whatever those things are, those niches for each person, you need to learn that about that person. And it may change, it may evolve, and you will evolve and learn with it.
That's the first one, communication and conflict resolution. That's good. The second one involves money, money management. Money is one of the biggest reasons that couples indicate that they get divorced. And so just talk about that really briefly, Tiff.
Money is a big one. It's definitely part of the security of marriage. if you are constantly living paycheck to paycheck, you don't have security at all. Mm-hmm. But even in that, if you at least have a plan for your money and where your money is going, that right. can help support that
right.
Instability a little bit. It can give you a yes. little bit more support in that instability.
Right.
Most people in the United States live paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
It's just the world that we live in right now. And part of that is because we don't know how to manage our money. And part mm-hmm. of it's because we don't make enough to manage.
Right.
So, but as long as there are less fights, if you can tell your money where your money is going and yes. know how to spend within your means.
And a big component of this isn't just getting on a budget and having enough money, because we know plenty of couples who make a lot of money who constantly fight sure. about money, no less. And so a major part of this isn't just having a budget and having enough money, although those are important. It's also being united together on those goals and yeah. working on that together, not just saying, well, I made the money, it's your job to make sure we keep enough or we save enough or whatever. That you have to work together, you have to keep each other involved in the finances, you have to both treat this like a united front. And that's one of the big reasons, honestly, if I could just give like one key to couples about money, I would say get joint accounts. And if you're resistant to that idea, if your immediate reaction to that is, well, I don't know if I can trust them with that.
Well, that's a trust issue.
Then you have a communication, you have a conflict resolution problem, yeah. exactly, that you need to deal with. And I'm glad that you came to that realization, because now you know where to kind of actually put some effort into. The third thing, Tiffany?
So the third one is a mutually satisfying sex life.
Yay, sex!
And it is important. Sex in marriage is, again, another part of your security
mm-hmm.
and your enjoyment and pleasure in your marriage. If
yes.
you're not happy in your sex life and you're not having sex as frequently or to the level that you would both be satisfied in, then
mm-hmm.
It's naturally going to lead to some distance between
yes.
you and your partner.
Yes.
And you don't want that. So
that's
have good
good
sex.
Yes, have
and
good
lots
sex.
Of it.
And I just point out too that the communication and conflict resolution was the first thing, but the three things that follow that all come back to the communication thing.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Yeah, so if you're having problems in your sex life, or if you're not feeling as satisfied in your sex life as you want to, this is a great thing for you guys to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about sex is fun with your spouse. I mean, you should enjoy talking about it and wanting to get better. Just wanting to please your spouse is sexy in and of itself.
Yeah.
And having that desire to do that for them.
And if you can't talk about it,
mm-hmm.
that's a bigger problem. So
right.
you need to get past the point of sex being this awkward taboo subject. You're married. It's okay.
Grow up. Exactly.
And you can learn a lot
mm-hmm.
from your partner and what they do and don't like and what they do and don't want. And,
mm-hmm.
and just talk about it and then go do it.
Yes. Practice. Practice.
Lots of practice.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the things too that we say about sex and marriage is that it's oftentimes a thermometer and it's oftentimes a thermostat. It's often both. In other words, at times it sets the temperature in your marriage, it sets the heat, the passion, the enjoyment, the satisfaction in your marriage. And at other times, it simply reveals the heat, the passion, the satisfaction, the enjoyment in your marriage. So it's a little bit of both.
I will tell you this too, that more often than not, if John and I are having a fight,
mm-hmm.
I can count back to the last time we had sex. And if it's been more than a few days,
mm-hmm.
that's generally the underlying issue. And if we just had sex, we'd be okay and would not be having the fight that we were having at the time.
Amen.
So.
I'm okay with that. Last of all, the fourth key is dealing with parenting, having a united strategy for parenting. And this is a big one because unless you married your sibling, you were raised differently from them and you have different ideas of what parenting looks like because you have different ideas of how it was modeled for you. But along those lines, it's important that you have a united front when you're parenting your kids. You made these spawn. They're 50% of both your DNA, and yet you have to have a united front when dealing with them. And so just talk about that for a second, Tiffany, as far as like what are some things that are kind of critical to united parenting, having a united front towards parenting and raising kids?
Well, if you've ever worked with kids and or known them at all, they are little terrorists.
It's true.
They're awful at times. And what they will do is they're very good
negotiators.
I've worked with kids for too long. Negotiators. In that they will ask for one thing and then they'll drop it down a little bit or they'll go up a little bit to see just how far you'll go.
Mm-hmm.
And if one parent says no, guess who they're running to?
The other parent.
And so we've put a stop to that. Mm-hmm. In that if one parent says no and you go to the other person, the other parent,
they have to be the one.
They have to be the one that disciplines you.
Yep.
And so our kids are pretty good about not doing it. They'll still test it every once in a while.
Yep.
We're pretty good about saying, what did dad say? Or what did mom say? Like, and kind of catching them and whatnot. So, that united, just knowing where you stand on basic issues and
how you're going to discipline. That's a big one.
How you're going to discipline.
Well, and I just want to add to that too that one of the things that is kind of important to this is that you've got to decide in advance what things you're going to do together in terms of how you're going to parent. You have to, and then there's some things that I'll just defer to let you do your way, and there's some things you need to defer to just letting me do my way when it comes to how we interact with the kids.
Sure.
But what's more important, and this is one of the things that makes our marriage really different, and the marriages that we try to counsel are very different. Is that we have an attitude, well, let me rephrase it this way. We do not have what we refer to as a kid-centric home or a kid-centric family. Our family, our life does not revolve around our kids. We have a marriage-centric home. Our family, our life revolves around our marriage, not the other way around. And that's a little bit counterintuitive to a lot of people because you create these spawn, you have this like emotional, natural, biological, connection to these people, and rightly so. But they're the worst roommates ever. Let's just start with that.
Oh yeah.
And as you call them, terrorists. And what I'd really suggest if you don't like the idea of having a kid-centric home or of a non-kid-centric home, I would change your perspective by saying it this way. Your children were not intended to bear the weight of the responsibility of keeping your marriage intact.
Amen.
And whether you are doing it intentionally or not, a kid-centric home that your life, your marriage revolves around doing things for your kids, supporting your kids, running them to events. And I'm not knocking any of those things. I'm saying that if the kids are the center of your marriage, the kids are the center of your family, they are not designed to bear that kind of a burden, and you'll break your kids in the process. It will not be to their well-being. It'll not be to their benefit. And we just decided a long time ago, people change careers all the time, people change educations all the time, but what we decided in advance was that we were going to do our best to model for our children what a happy, healthy, strong, worthwhile marriage looks like. And I think that is probably the best gift we can give our children besides our spiritual heritage of knowing God and understand Christ, but we think that our kids even see that through our marriage as well. So just any last thoughts on that, Tiffany, or...
No, you covered it pretty well.
Thank you. You did great yourself.
Thank you.
There's so much more we could obviously talk about in regard to the subject of a worthwhile marriage, and this will by no means be the last podcast that we deal with it. Hopefully, it'll be a little bit cooler in my office the next time we do this, because we've had the door shut now for 40 minutes, and we're both dying of heat exhaustion, so we're probably going to wrap things up here. But thank you for listening. At the end of every podcast every week, I offer a prayer for you, and obviously today I'm wanting to pray for your marriages and your future marriages if you're single. And if you're not particularly religious, that's okay. Take this prayer as good vibes if you want to. That's totally fine with me. But it is an important part of everything worthwhile in my life and certainly in our marriage. And we want to offer that to you as a source of strength in this episode. So let me pray for you as we close. God, thank you for the gift of marriage. Thank you that we get to practice the kind of agape love for our spouse as you showed us when Christ gave his life on the cross. Help us, God, to model the same unconditional, self-sacrificial love for one another that you modeled for us. Help us to raise children in our families who are healthy emotionally, socially, and spiritually. And God, we ask you for strong, healthy, happy, worthwhile marriages to all of our listeners today. In Jesus' name. The Worthwhile Podcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/theworthwhilepodcast to make your monthly pledge. My name is John Markham. Thanks for listening.